Up in the bungalow, the twins thought of nothing but the reward. When would it come? What would they do with it? How could they stop their parents from trying to get a share? Maya heard them still whispering about it when they went to bed. Sometimes their voices rose and they seemed to be on the edge of a quarrel. But then they made up again because they saw themselves as standing alone against the world. And as soon as we get it, we can start getting rid of Maya. That was the other thing they whispered about. They had got rid of Miss Porterhouse by accusing her of stealing their things. They had got rid of Miss Chisholm by telling their mother that she had been seen in Manhouse with men. They'd think of something different for Maya, but they would do it. And once Maya went, Miss Minton would go too, and they would be free. And while the twins quarrelled about the reward, Mr. and Mrs. Carter quarrelled about Maya's allowance. "I tell you," said Mr. Carter, "I'll have to have this month's allowance for Maya. It's no good you hanging on to it like you did last month." "Well, you can't. The twins need new dancing shoes and the dentist says they need to have braces on their teeth. You know how expensive that is. You don't want your daughters to grow up with crooked teeth, do you? All I had to worry about was my daughter's teeth, I'd be an happy man. That swine Lima has walked out on me, my own agent. If he gangs up with the Gonzales, I'm finished." "Perhaps if you didn't spend your money on those ridiculous glass eyes, you wouldn't be so hard up. Let me tell you that my collection is worth more than anything else in this house." "Well, why don't you sell it then and pay your debts? You know I only agreed to have Maya because of the money she brought. It's I who have to put up with her, not you. You hardly see her. You hardly see your own daughters, and anyway, I've ordered a new cockroach killer. They're sending it out from the Army and Navy stores in London, and it's expensive." "Cockroach killer? I've never heard of anything so ridiculous. Just throw benzene over them and set them alight." "Really, Clifford, no wonder you can't run a proper business. Benzene indeed? I shall have to write to Mr. Murray and ask him for more money for the girl. She's not worth keeping for what I get." She broke off because Maya had come into the room. She was carrying her dancing shoes to say the launch was ready to go into Manhouse. Maya had heard the quarrel. Their angry voices echoed through the bungalow. It was a long time since she had thought that the Carters had taken her in because they wanted her. But knowing that she would still be living with these people after Finn had gone was hard to bear. 2 hours later, she was playing the piano to Mr. Holtman and had forgotten her misery. She was getting on well, but the best part of her lesson came at the end when Holtman made her sing. She still wouldn't listen when he suggested that she had her voice trained, but she asked him about the Indian tribes, their songs that had been collected. Could she get hold of any of them? I mean the Indians that lived in the tribes in the forest, not the ones near the towns. "A few of them have been collected," he answered. "Only a very few, and there is much work to be done there, but you would find these songs very different and not at all easy to write down." "But it could be done." "Yes, with patience and a good ear." He smiled at Maya's eager face. "And you have both, I think." At the dancing class, everyone knew that Finn Taverner had been caught by the crows, that the twins had betrayed his hiding place, and that he was on his way to England and the dreaded Westwood. Everyone was sorry, and no one would speak to the twins, not that they noticed. Even before the news of the reward, the twins had lived in a world of their own. Sergei was not there. His father had taken him on a journey upriver, but Mademoiselle Lille had brought Olga. The Kaminsky's governess had come in with red-rimmed eyes and the news that her father had died back in France and that she was sailing home on the next boat to Europe. "I am thinking," she whispered to Miss Minton as they sat and watched the children dance, "why don't you come and take my job? The Kaminsky's are excellent employers." "Well, you have seen that." "Yes, I can imagine no one better to work for," said Miss Minton, "but I couldn't leave Maya. Perhaps they would have Maya also. The children are very fond of her, Sergei in particular. When do you leave?
In 2 weeks. My poor mother is quite distraught.
I'll have a think about it, thank you, said Miss Minton.
She had doubted whether Mr. Murray would give permission for Maya to go live with unknown family of Russians. She would say nothing to Maya. There was no point in raising her hopes.
Though Finn had made it clear that he would not take Maya with him, she could not stop dreaming. It seemed to her that there could be nothing better than to travel on the Arabella, on and on and on, to wake at dawn and cook breakfast over the Primus, and to watch the herons and the cormorants dive for fish, to feed logs into the firebox and smell wood smoke as they caught, and then to chug up the still, dark rivers with trees leaning over to give shade, or across a sudden white water lagoon where the water was milky in the sunlight. This was what she had imagined that evening in the school library, sitting on top of the ladder and reading about the treasures of the Amazon that were poured into the lap of those who were not afraid. But she had not then imagined Finn. Finn was obstinate. He could be bad-tempered and curt, and he was far too full of his own opinions, but she had fallen into friendship with him, as surely as a soppy older girl's at school had fallen in love, and now he was going, and Clovis had gone, and she would be left alone with the twins, at first hoping that Finn would change his mind and let her come. She had worked extra hard helping him with the Arabella, but after a while she became so interested that she helped for its own sake.
"Have you got any books about boats?" she asked Minty. "One doesn't learn about boats from books," said Miss Minton. But she found a manual about the maintenance of a steam launch in a second-hand bookshop in Manhouse. "What do you think they'll be like, the Zante?" Maya asked Finn, and he shrugged. "My father said they were the kindest people he'd ever met, and they knew everything there was to know about healing. I'd like to learn that from them. After all, 3/4 of medicines we use come from plants, and most of them come from the forests here." He hesitated. "I thought maybe one day I could become a doctor, but not the kind that just gives people pills." Maya nodded. Finn would make a good doctor. She could see that. "Did he say if they had any songs?"
"They'll have songs all right. All Indians sing, especially when they're travelling."
Maya sighed. She wanted to learn about the songs like Finn wanted to learn about the plants. But it was hopeless. "It's too dangerous," was all Finn would say. And that was that.
She tried to put it out of her mind, but she couldn't. There were girls at school who wanted to ride and others who wanted to go on the stage. And there was a girl who had made a terrible fuss till she was allowed to learn the oboe. Not the flute, not the clarinet. It had to be the oboe. They knew that these things were for them, and Maya knew that boats were for her. Boats and going on and on and on and not arriving unless one wanted to. When they weren't working on the boat, Finn took her into the forest. He showed her which nuts to pick and which to avoid, how to get fruit down from the highest branches and how to walk quietly, picking up her feet higher than usual, not thumping and blundering about. Once he brought down a packer with his bow and arrow. "They're good to eat," he said. "You have to be able to kill for food if necessary." And he waited for Maya to make a fuss. But though she turned pale when the little rodent twitched on his arrow, she said nothing. He showed her how to make body paint from the yucura berries and how to fetch water from the river without getting scum into the kettle. And the more she learnt, the more she wanted to learn, and the more she dreaded the day of his departure. But he wasn't gone yet, not quite. She could still come into the lagoon and hear him whistling as he did his chores, and she would have been surprised if she had known that Finn too was fearful of their parting. Then, just 2 weeks after the bishop had left Manhouse, the liner came out of the maze of waterways at the head of the Amazon Delta and headed out for open sea. Even if Clovis had been found out,
There would be no chance now of sending him back before they reached England. "There's no point in waiting any longer," said Finn. "The boat is ready, as she'll ever be. If we clear the reeds away, she'll get through." "We," thought Maya bitterly. Obviously, he expected her to help him clear the passage out of the lagoon, and then he'd wave goodbye and she'd never see him again. "If it had been the other way round, I'd have taken you," she said. "I suppose you think it makes it easier for me," said Finn angrily. "I wasn't trying to make it easier for you," said Maya, and she stalked away. But Finn did not go immediately. It was as though the Arabella wasn't sure if she wanted to go adventuring after her quiet time in the lagoon. First, they found a small leak through the hull under the floorboards, and then Finn dropped the washer for the valve which regulated the amount of steam going into the boiler. He didn't just drop it, he dropped it into the deepest part of the lake, and though he and Maya dived for it again and again, they couldn't find it. Furrow went to Manhouse to get a replacement, but before they could put it in, another week had passed. It was harder for Miss Minton to get away to the lagoon. When she did manage it, she bullied Finn about the Caesar's Gaelic Wars. "Those legions are never going to get across the bridge at this rate," she said, looking at the book still open at the page 57. But when she had finished lecturing Finn about the importance of Latin to someone who wanted to collect plants, she lent a hand with the chores, scrubbing the floor of the hut to whiteness. "Having been a housemaid always comes in useful," she said. One afternoon, when the children were on their own, they saw the macaws in the tree that guarded the entrance had flown up, squawking. But it was not Furrow come to fetch Maya. It was Colonel De Silva, with his second in command, come to take charge of Bernard Taverner's possessions. "Dios," he said, paddling up to the hut, "what is this?" So Finn explained, and when he finished, the Colonel was laughing so much he looked as if he was going to fall into the water. The idea of the crows bringing a penniless actor to Westwood was the best thing he had heard in ages. "And you, Senorita?" he said to Maya, "a heroine no less." And he told them that instructions to pay out the reward for Finn's capture had been telegraphed from the bishop, so there could be no suspicion that they did not have the right boy. Then came the day Maya had dreaded. The last of the provisions were loaded onto the Arabella. Manioc flour, dried beans, oil from the Primus, and gifts for the Indians. That night Finn came to say goodbye to Furrow and the others. "You're to look after Maya," he told them. "Promise me you will not let any harm come to her." And Furrow, who had been sulking because he too wanted to go with Finn, gave his promise, as did Tappy and Conchita and old Lila, who was inconsolable, weeping and rocking back and forth and declaring that she would be dead before he returned. Watching from her window, Maya saw him come out of Lila's hut, and for a moment she thought he was going to go without saying goodbye. But then he walked across the compound, stood under her window, and she heard him whistle the tune that he had whistled on the night she came. "Blow the wind southerly, 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 blow the wind southerly, the bonny blue sea." She ran outside and hugged him and wished him luck, and she did not cry. "You're not to spoil it for him," Minty had said, and she didn't. But when he had gone, she stood for a long time by the window trying to remember the words of the song. It was a song begging the wind to bring back someone who had gone away on a ship. But she did not think it ended happily. Well, why should it? Why should the wind care if she never saw Finn again?